You're listening to Lucid Cafe. I'm your host, Wendy Halley. Welcome back. I'm so happy to have my guest, Maida Pak, back on the podcast. If you haven't listened to it already, I highly recommend checking out the previous episode with Maida. It was the first episode of this season, season two. She's an amazing person with quite a story, definitely worth a listen. I enjoyed talking with her so much that I invited her to come back on the show. Today, we have an honest, candid conversation about what it's like to be a woman in the workplace. But before we get to today's episode, a little bit about Maida Pak. She's a life and career coach for executives and entrepreneurs. She loves to help overachievers find more balance and clarity in their lives and in their careers, and to feel a sense of purpose. Prior to becoming a certified coach and hypnotist, Maida spent some 16 years in investment banking and finance and in different executive roles before a series of personal crises pointed her in a new direction. She now helps executives and entrepreneurs feel more at home in their lives, their relationships, their careers, their families, and their environment. So please enjoy my conversation with the very wise and powerful Maida Pak. I am so happy to welcome Maida back on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. It was such a pleasure last time to talk together, to exchange ideas, to exchange philosophies of life and different views and different perspectives. I'm really very excited to be here today.
I'm so psyched because today we're going to continue this conversation, yes. But now we're going to take it in the direction of, we're going to start out talking about the role of women in the workplace and some of the things you've discovered through your work and some thoughts you have. So yeah, I'm curious, what brought your attention to this area?
I am one of those women. I was. I spent 16 years of my life in finance, and it's a sector, and in banking in particular, in investment banking. And this is a place where, when I started, I used to be the first woman on every desk I started in, or the second woman. But basically, for a big part of my career, I was the only woman in these teams where there were mostly men. At the beginning, it's a bit awkward, maybe more awkward for them than it was for me, because I never really was brought up as different from men. That's my family's philosophy, and it's a good philosophy. It's just you go, you work,
you're just a human being.
You're a human being. It doesn't matter what you are. It's different if you have kids, of course, because there is another dimension. But you go to work, you do your job. It was a bit more awkward for the gentlemen. Well, first in Paris, because in Paris I was on an equity sales desk, and it's like a locker room, so and it was very interesting because they did not filter themselves for me. And came a time, so it was a bit different. It was late 90s, early 2000s, and there wasn't the kind of filtering, or I'm going to call that censorship, but it's not the right word, but there wasn't kind of sensitivity to certain things that were circulating on the internet at that time. There were no firewalls, there was nothing like that. So rowdy boys, locker room mentality, came a time where I went to see them and I said, listen, I am not stopping you from looking at any of these images that you're trying to offend me. It doesn't. It's fine. You do whatever you
want. Was it like pornography type stuff?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes.
In the workplace. Wow.
Oh, yes. All right. That was finance and the
I've never worked at a place where that was okay. Okay.
So is this in the US? So
yeah.
The kind of political correctness came much later in France and in the UK. And that was a real spill-off from the US mentality. The same way when I started working, people were still smoking in the workplace as well. So it came a bit later for that. But I told them, it's fine, you know. You're not offending me. I'm not going to play that game. Actually, I'm not offended. You do whatever you want. However, if it's preventing me from doing my job, because my job, I was a junior person, and my job is to help you, then this is a problem. So you do whatever you want. But when I am walking behind you to go to my desk, or when I'm doing work for your clients, it's not okay. And they respected that. So that was the first agreement that I made. And then things continued to be that way without having to make agreements anymore. In the UK, in London, I was working with a team that was mostly nerds, I'm going to say. we were doing derivatives, and it was, you know, mostly math and complicated things. They weren't that complicated, but they like people to think it's complicated.
To me, it probably would be very complicated.
So that went fine. And the US, it was probably the easiest for me as a woman, because the US mentality is very tamed in terms of making comments on how women do this, or that. I've never had anyone telling me something like, you cannot do that because you're a woman, or we cannot put you in front of a client because you're a woman. I never had that.
But you did have it in Europe.
In the UK, there was, and I credit this more to the fact that certain people, not everyone, by far, it was really an exception or two, but it's this kind of boys club mentality in the UK, where people go to the schools, you know, there's school for boys and school for girls, and then they get together and in university, and then in the workplace, and it's a bit awkward. So there was a bit of that. Luckily, my boss at that time and my colleagues at that time were absolutely not like that. So my progression happened more because I was doing the right work, and I was delivering the right projects and the right accomplishments, more than being hindered by the fact that I was a woman. This said, I saw it happening. I saw it happening elsewhere, and I saw it happening to other women.
But not to you so much.
No.
I wonder if it was something about the way you carried yourself, or...
I'm going to say that one of the things that never really stopped me is to think that I could be different from a man. Mm. I am a very sensitive person by nature, and I would show my sensitivity as well during my job. There were times where I was rowdy. There were times where I was extremely irreverent. There were times where I was rude to other people. There were times where I was shouting on to other people.
Really?
It's very scary for people, a woman who shouts at them. Very. Because they don't know how
I'm
to
just trying to picture you doing this.
Oh, don't.
Okay.
I'm trying to forgive myself for doing
gotcha.
That.
Gotcha. But all right, so...
It was a coping mechanism more than anything.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that. This is one of the situations of burnout and frustration that you get into in the workplace as well. So you did up. What they say, men shout and women cry. I was doing both. But I learned very quickly that crying at the desk as a woman is not a good idea. So I would cry in the bathroom or at home, but I would shout at the desk when it became way too much for me to handle. It had mostly to do with the fact that the work was very stressful, and it's finance, and everything has to go quick, and everything has to be precise. There was no downtime, really, and it's very heavy on the body, and it's heavy on the brain, and okay, we can talk about this for a long time.
Right, so... I I don't talk about this a lot, but I'm actually a veteran. I was in the military when I...
That's okay. Forget finance. That's nothing.
Well, what's interesting is that, so I joined when I was 17. My parents had to actually, they thought I was nuts for doing this. The reason why I joined is because I wanted to go to college and I didn't know how to go about doing that. And a friend of mine who graduated from high school a year before me contacted me. He joined the Air Force and he contacted me when he was in and said, Wendy, I am going to school for free on base. So I go to my job, then I go to class, and then I go back to my job. And I thought, maybe that's the way I can go to college. And my SAT scores sucked. They just sucked. So there was no going to college on scholarship or anything like that. No one in my family had ever gone to college. I would have been the first. And because no one in my family had gone to college, no one knew how to have the conversation with me about how do you go to college? I didn't even know. I didn't understand how to even start the process. So the Air Force seemed like the most logical option. So I joined the military at 17. That was my plan. I went in the military a couple months after I turned 18. And it was a very interesting experience to be female in the military. And this was in the mid-80s.
I can imagine. And I can just imagine.
Well, the ratio was, I think there was something like 10 or 8 men to every one woman. So there's that. But I mean, as far as I go, I have never really seen much of a difference between men and women as far as opportunities. And I actually hung out with the guys more than I did the girls when I was coming up. I felt more comfortable with guys talking about sports, and I come from a gearhead family, so talking about cars. And yeah, when I was little, I thought girls were a little bit more challenging to be around just for me. But I remember thinking as a teenager, like, man, it sure would be easier to be a guy. It just seemed like it would be easier. And I was always a tomboy. I dressed probably, and I still do. I'm looking down at my ripped Levi's. Very professional. I always dressed tomboyish. Sometimes like a feminine shirt with really masculine pants. Or I used to wear ties when I was in high school, like men's ties. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, going in the military, I learned when I was in the service that women would actually join to find a husband because the odds of finding one were really good. That certainly was not my objective, but I knew of women who did that. But it was such a strange thing. Just, I never thought about sexual harassment and those kinds of things because it just wasn't in our psyche at that time. It wasn't in the mainstream. It wasn't in our conscious thought. But I'm thinking about the times when guys would make moves on me, married guys mostly, so easily without even thinking about it. And I was not giving any indication other than having conversations with them. It was a really strange time where they felt like so comfortable where they would just try to make a move. It was the weirdest thing, but I just thought like, huh, okay, this is awkward. This is, one of them was my boss. Who was married, and it's like, what do you do when your boss is trying to make out with you?
Run, but I don't think it was really a possibility for him.
But I was also, you know, 18 years old, and he was my superior, and it's a strange kind of thing. He was cool about it when I rejected him, but I didn't know he was going to be cool about it. I mean, I didn't know him really super well or anything, but it was a really strange environment, but that kind of thing happened a lot. I don't know if it was just because the lack of females around, but most of these guys were married. Anyway, I got off on a big old tangent.
It's very interesting because I think it goes back to a bit what was happening in finance. And again, I'm certainly not comparing being in finance to being in the military and serving your country and putting your life at risk. It's very different.
Well, it was peacetime at that time, so it was the Cold War time. So I fortunately didn't have to go into combat.
Thank goodness. It's not the easiest situation to be when you are a young adult at any time, anyways. But I think it goes also back to something that has been changing. It's not only the awareness of it from the part of women, but I think also there has been some sort of ongoing education as well, an effort to educate people about what consent is about. So, and it works for both women and men, and not only for sexual anything. It has to be the case for a lot of different things as well. It has to be the case in your relationships in life, friendships and what have you. It's the power of the consent is do not infringe on somebody else's space, on somebody else's life, on their beliefs, even if you hate how they think, even if it's completely outside your values. It's a consent. It's all about consent. Do they agree to have a discussion with you? And if it's no, then it's no, and you move on. And I think there is a lot of this in the air right now, but it's like one of those pendulum, right? We go from completely oblivious of it and everything is okay. There is one female for 8 men, then, you know, it's fair game, right? That's okay. She's there. And we go now to the other side of the pendulum where it's become very difficult, or at least much more difficult, to have a conversation, to have for a man in particular, because I see that as well, for men to have discussions with women in the workplace that are friendly without having a risk of being accused or something, or even before being accused of just offending a female co-worker by saying something maybe that can be construed as offending, which is, it's more, I think, if we have to summarize all this, I think the best way to go about this is to get informed, to inform other people when you have that occasion, to educate them, but also to become more and more conscious about our behaviors in the workplace and our behaviors generally. So when someone, let's say you're a female and someone comes and asks you a question, it's not necessarily, and it's offending to you or you feel like you're stressed or triggered, it's not, don't always assume that this person is coming with bad intentions.
Right.
Just ask more questions, and if it's inappropriate for you, you can decline and say, no, listen, this is totally inappropriate, or I'm not interested. But ultimately, the reason why we are all working together is to learn how to work together and to learn how to build stuff together. Because as much as we can look at the state of the world right now, it was built by men. And, I'm not going to make an inventory of everything that is not working. There are some stuff working, but there is a lot that is still in progress. The same way, I don't think that women on their own can build anything either. I think right now it's about co-creating together. It's about accepting our differences and work together. So I can see it with some of my clients and some of my friends where they have spouses who are in their 40s and 50s, 35, 40s and 50s, who are the older generation, that are helping at work and helping for them to get their career on track and encouraging them, and at the same time are helping at home. So there's less this kind of dichotomy and division of, you know, the woman is at home, takes care of the kids and what have you, and the guy goes to work. There is less of that. There is a lot of work to do, but it has to become from individuals and on a case-per-case basis, rather than, you know, putting laws and constraints and telling people, no, you cannot do this, blah, 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 you know. Sometimes telling someone you have a nice tie, well, I like your tie, it's just something nice to say. It doesn't mean that there's any intention behind it.
Right.
So we need to be aware that when we are giving someone, paying someone a compliment, it can be an issue for them. But if you're on the other side, think for 2 seconds. Somebody is trying to strike a conversation with you. They don't know how to do it. They want to connect. And someone sometimes just saying, you know, you have a nice tie is the easiest, or you have a nice shirt or whatever is the easiest way to do it.
Right. If we were to pull out and look at the kind of bigger picture of what could be happening right now, and this is just my perspective, because I've thought about this a little bit. There's some indigenous prophecy that is suggesting that we're moving into a new time. And some of them would call it the end of one world and the beginning of a new world, or the end of one era and the beginning of a new era. And we're going from a world where the masculine was dominant, and a lot of indigenous people are saying we're moving into a world where there's balance between the masculine and the feminine. Which is a really nice idea. I vote for that. I hope that that's what's happening. And it's interesting that these gender is really front and center in a lot of conversations in the mainstream right now. And my thought on what could be happening is that just like when someone is going through individual change, when they discover something new about themselves, that it becomes this really loud thing in their own psyche. And so they're really focused on that thing that they've developed insight about, and they become aware of all of these aspects of themselves. So, or let's say I can speak to someone who's going through counseling or a healing process, that they discovered that they have trauma in their background, and that trauma becomes a big focal point of their healing journey. And they're trying to make sense of it and have it settle into their inner world in some way, but it's so loud in the beginning. And there can be a kind of a hyper awareness or a hyper focus on it, and it could turn into kind of a hyper vigilance. So if anyone approaches me and triggers me, that there's a really big reaction up front, and then as the person heals and the trauma sort of settles into their being in a healed way, then the triggers become less and less intense because they understand that they have power, that they don't have to be a victim to the circumstances or whatever. And so if I were to apply that in a more global way, so if women typically haven't had much of a voice in this masculine world, and now we are finding our voice, and our voices can become really loud at first. And there's like a hypervigilance around wanting to be heard, because for hundreds of years, I haven't been heard. And now I'm finally, you're listening to me. And so you see a kind of this cowering of the masculine of like, oh shit.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you know, but it's like a swinging of the pendulum. Mm-hmm. So we're going in this other direction of women sort of like, hey, I want my power back, or I want some power, or I want some agency, or however that looks. So it's very loud right now. And then I'm wondering, I'm hoping if it'll come back, and the healing process will be that gender won't need to be a part of the conversation. It'll just be about we're humans, and we're humans with differences. And so we just kind of acknowledge each other's differences. Some of them are gender related, some of them are belief related, some of them are abilities, different abilities.
Yeah, I think to your point, right now we are in the stage where the trauma that you mentioned earlier is not only on an individual level, but it's on a societal level. It's global. We can see a lot of the new generation that grew up with the internet, with the social media, and we, even the older generations, we have been very sensitized right now. What used to be just a headline on some newspaper that you can see on your way to work is now plastered everywhere. And of course, there are going to be a lot of noise, and a good noise, made around certain cases of patriarchy, for example, of excesses. And I think that the healing is starting right now with the exposure and being allowed to speak up. Once all of this is out, then the healing process can begin. And the healing process will be probably women healing other women. And I think this is what you and I are doing right now. It could be men healing women. There's no rule anymore around how this is going to happen. But like you, I have a big hope that at some point we will join forces. I think the men that have been imposing their views on the world were not a majority. They were a minority who have been extremely loud and powerful, and they got their power by force and what have you. But now women, and if you can just take a look, we spoke earlier about women in the world. There aren't a lot of women CEOs or a lot of women in governments, but there are certain one of them that have been extremely vocal and have been also exerting their power in a very logical way, and trying to change the world for a better place. And I'm still thinking about Angela Merkel. I'm thinking about Christine Lagarde. I'm thinking also about all these women, Republican and Democrats in the US, that have been trying as well to bring a new way of doing politics into the field. And this will extend to CEOs. And like everything in society, it's if the top can be the precursor, if the top can be the role models, then it will trickle down to everyone. So this is where we need more and more women CEOs, not because they are women, but because they are efficient, because it doesn't matter whether they're women or not. And as much as they can showcase their competence and their knowledge and their efficiency, then the gender conversation will start being more a fringe conversation, because they will bring that to the world. And I think at our level, it's more about healing this wounded part of the feminine one by one through our respective work and coaching and therapy and what have you. I think a lot of the things that I'm seeing are not necessarily gender specific, but they touch women, they concern women. Probably women react to it much more intensely than men, because we react differently, our priorities are different. I'm thinking about burnout in the workplace. I'm thinking about stress, about all these coping mechanisms that women have been using for the last few years that are not working anymore. What I'm seeing right now in the workplace is a lot of frustration, is hitting a glass ceiling. And this is where maybe we will go back to this gender-specific type of conversation, although it's not really gender specific, it's more behavioral specific, but one can argue that behavior comes from education. And for a lot of us, our education was conditioned by our gender as well. So in terms of going back into stress, into the workplace, it's not only older women, it's younger women as well. As women are advancing in the workplace, they are feeling not validated and not recognized. They're coping with stress, they're coping with overwhelm, they're coping with a lot of demands in the workplace. They are, for many of them, at this position where they are sandwiched in between a top management and more the younger type of crowd. They feel that they are responsible for everybody's delivery, and they feel that their upper management is not supporting them enough. And just to give you an example, one of the things that I've seen so many times, and I haven't seen that with men, this is why I had some gender specifics, is what I call the misplaced loyalty. And that's me who call it that. Okay. It's not necessarily true. The misplaced loyalty is these women who are at that kind of mid-level or senior sometimes, but they always have somebody more senior than them. Well, everybody does, right? But then there is this behavior that I saw typically with women is they want to protect the juniors, so they become their moms. Yeah, even if they have the same age, doesn't matter. They become, they don't want them to work late, so they stay till the end to make sure that the work is done. And at the same time, they are very loyal to their managers, upper managers, so they don't, they cover for them if the manager has, I don't know, goes on holidays or, you know, that afternoon has a kid's sports event, then the woman takes over, which can be fine if it was true the other way around. Where it's not true the other way around is when women take time for their kids, for example, there is always a little comment that comes, as in, you're supposed to be available 100%. It's more highlighted, I would say, than when a man takes time for his kids. A man who takes time to go and cheer his kids or take them to kindergarten is a wonderful dad. A woman who does that is not doing her job in the workplace. So this increases the demands on women. This increases the sensation of overwhelm, of still having to do it all, of not having support. And this is where you go into a form of burnout, a lot of fatigue, outbursts, a form of depression, a form of hopelessness, and everything that goes with that, which is not helpful.
Right. The desire to start looking for another job usually is when it gets really bad. Yeah. Thinking, if I change my environment, if I change my job, then that will decrease my symptoms and I'll feel better.
And as you know, it's never works. It doesn't work that way because it's a behavior that you are going to find elsewhere. So the idea is to work with these women at that time, or just ideally just before this happens. But as you know, we wait for the last second and then we wait to be pushed before, you know, deciding to jump. And there are a lot of ways to cope with that. There are a lot of tools out there. There is, of course, therapy, there is coaching, there is tapping, there is hypnosis, there is behavioral changes. The tools are there. The idea is for people to be aware of that. And thankfully, a lot of companies right now are putting together wellness workshops and getting better in the workplace and this and that. So
there is more attention being brought to wellness in the workplace, which is a good thing. Yes.
The idea is now for individuals as well to do it on their own, not wait for the workplace to tell you what to do. One of the things that I see as well is that the way when you are a parent, the way you behave at home is also how your kids are going to behave at some point. If you have a mom and a dad who are sharing the chores, a mom and a dad who have no issues with the other one working more or working less, and a mom and a dad who are not necessarily happy all the time at work, because this doesn't really exist, we will all go through ups and downs, but a mom and a dad who manage their stress, who understand priorities, who understand being present, this is also something that will help their kids at school and will help their kids also in the workplace when they will get there. Because as much as, I don't know for you, but for me, when I started working, work was like, maybe because it was in France as well, but working was like a life sentence. It was, you work for 40 years, and after 40 years, it's retirement, it's like freedom, I can do whatever I want. 40 years is a big time to spend in a sort of prison, even if it's a prison where you put yourself.
Right, yeah, and so if you don't like your job, that's torture.
And when you like your job, it's also about how managing your days, how to make sure you have a some sort of balance, and you decide what balance looks like, right? You cannot be an entrepreneur and launching a business and thinking you're going to spend 4 days a week with your family. It's you need to be realistic in your expectations.
So what you're suggesting is that it's important to role model.
Yes.
Especially if you have children.
Yes.
But also to your colleagues.
And to yourself.
And to yourself, yeah.
And to your colleagues,
What good self-care is and self-awareness is.
Yeah, because, you know, when you're in a system, the system doesn't like change, right? The system will do everything to fight change and stay exactly as is. When there is a person that changes, then the system will have to readapt to find a new kind of stasis, a new kind of balance. So the good part is that if you change and you elevate the debate here, with time, the rest of the system will have to elevate as well, especially if you are coming from the top.
Right. My workplace wellness experience over the last decade has shown that leadership really does set the tone for the culture in the workplace. And so if you have a leader who is a proponent of self-care, then that's a good workplace. If that's not on the radar for that leader, then or they have really high expectations, then the workforce is suffering as a result. What I was going to say is, to your point a while ago, is that if one person makes a change, that it will have a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. But I find that there'll be some pushback first.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah, people don't like change. Humans don't like change. And even if it's change that's good for us, we tend to resist it. We like the familiar. We like what's comfortable. And so it takes a lot of courage, I would suggest, for someone to really stick to their guns and go with the change that's the healthiest.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's exactly that. It's a courage. It's also keeping in mind why you're doing this. And don't wait to have a health issue before starting taking care of your health. It's called prevention. And the workplace is sometimes so pressurizing that we tend to see the work first and all the rest second. Now, there is a time and place for this to happen, but there are times where you will be pulled into other places. And I think also, exactly to your point, it's not a rigid anything. It's about adapting. The more you adapt to the moments, the more tools you have, the more resourceful you become, and the easier it becomes. So it's not about saying, you know, going to the workplace and saying, I am going to work 4 days a week and I'm not changing and this is take it or leave it. It's a bit extreme. It's more about encouraging your team that there are days when there is a lot of work and that these days you're going to work late. And please stop pushing back because there's nothing I can do. We have something to deliver and we need to deliver. So you coach your team in a way to become more aware of how work needs to be done. And then there are days where people can work from home and could be as efficient working from home as they would be. It's getting out of this kind of clocking mentality where you have to come at work at 9, you clock out at 5, and everything outside is free. We're not there anymore. We have our emails pursuing us day and night and on weekends and holidays. The world doesn't stop. People work with China. People work with Asia. There's no downtime anymore. The idea is more about finding the balance in that and also allowing people to find their own balance as well.
So what kind of suggestion do you have for say your clients when they're not in a leadership position, but they want to change, but they're bumping up against a leader who doesn't support the change that they want to incorporate?
So I would say the first thing, and it's the case for everything, just talk, communicate and explain. Most times people on the manager side come from a place of fear. Because as you said, we don't like change. You have this person, you have been working with them for, let's say, 3 years, and all of a sudden this person is saying, you know, tomorrow I need to take a day off, or tomorrow, I think, in a week, I need to take a day off for XYZ. And a lot of these managers will come from a place of fear. How am I going to do that? I'm going to have more work. You know, they go into all these scenarios. So first communicate with them, work with them. See if this is a good time with them. Second, whenever you go and see a manager, don't only bring a problem, bring the solution. Always. It doesn't matter at which level you are, even if the solution is not the final solution.
But something.
So if in 3 weeks, 2 weeks, you decide that you need that day off for XYZ reasons, make sure somebody is covering. Make sure that you tell them, I will be checking my emails every 3 hours. It's all about the communication. After that, you have also to see if their demands are reasonable or not. You are paid for a certain amount of work and deliverables. Companies will, because that's their job, will try to squeeze out of you as much as they can. It's also an empowerment issue for you to say, listen, I'm paid this much. I have been delivering everything consistently and efficiently. You're asking me for more. In a diplomatic way, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? Right? And start negotiating that way. Maybe for you, it's important to have a promotion. Maybe for you, it's important to have a different assignment. Maybe for you, it's about having more juniors in your team. All this is negotiable.
I think you're bringing up a really important point that might be worth exploring a little bit more. Just asserting yourself as a woman in the workplace. If you have any of the needs you just described, I need more people on my team, you're asking too much of me. How does a woman assert herself in a way that is effective and healthy? Because unfortunately, I think a lot of women, if they, getting back to the gender differences in communication in the workplace, it's seen differently.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not an expert in this by any means, but just as an observer, where I have noticed that women will tend to back down.
Yep.
And I know I certainly have been guilty of this. I'll back down if somebody with a stronger voice overpowers me. And I've seen it not just with me, but with lots of women I've worked with over the years in the workplace. What are your thoughts on that?
You're bringing a very good point, is that women tend to be nice. And women tend to feel very guilty about letting people down. I'm not going to let my boss down. My job is my responsibility. I cannot let my team down. I have heard that countless times, and I did that a lot. One way of doing this is making sure you understand why you're doing what you're doing. If your priority is your health, which I hope it is, there will come a time where you will feel that you are overextended. And this is part of self-care. And this is mostly, let's forget self-care because everybody has a different definition. But it's mostly self-respect. If you are, you look around you and you see that there is a staggering difference between how men are being treated in a way and you, speak up. And my personal advice, don't bring the gender issue. Just say, so-and-so, it looks like that so-and-so and my team are spending a bit more time outside and are able to do that. I am delivering as well. And I would like to have this same kind of extension or same kind of courtesy. Or you don't even need to name the persons. You can just show that there is a difference in treatment. I think that mostly where women need to kind of get over themselves is not to be afraid of asking, not to be afraid of conflict, even in the workplace. It's not because somebody barks more than you that they are right. This is where you go into a bit less emotionality, become a bit more logical, and bringing solutions.
That's one of the comments that women will get a lot, is that they're too emotional.
Yes.
And you're saying that we should approach these conversations in a more rational,
yes,
not emotional way.
Yes.
All right. So
emotions have their time, but communication with emotions in the workplace can be useful as well. I have clients who arrived in tears in front of their bosses because they couldn't take it anymore and they got what they wanted. That's very heavy on the body to
Well, it's also, I mean, anger has been acceptable,
yes,
in the workplace.
Yes.
And it sounds like from what you're saying that tears can be,
mm-hmm, yeah,
okay. But what I'm thinking is that both can be seen as manipulative.
They are.
Anger,
yeah, they are.
And tears.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that like the more clarity you can bring, mm-hmm, to a conversation, the more you'll be taken seriously. And you want to be taken seriously in a way that you're not creating an unhealthy pattern with your superior. You're not saying, well, I'm going to have to get upset every time I need something to change. I have to be upset or I have to be angry. That's fucked up. That shouldn't be the way it goes. So to come from this place of being very grounded, mm-hmm. very clear, and you state your case.
Yeah.
I think that's a brilliant way to go. But you have to be in the right headspace to be able to do that. So it usually requires some prep time. It doesn't matter what your gender is. I think that's just a great way to approach a difficult conversation. You have to have your ducks in a row. Yeah, I just think that that's a smart business approach.
Yeah, it's being professional. Think about
oh, professional, that's
everything you're doing as being professional. If tomorrow you have a client and the client gets upset at you and start shouting all over the place, that is not a very adult and professional way of conducting business. With the same thing, your boss or your junior is a client as well. Think about everything that way. You are the product. And the client is the person in front of you. How do you showcase your product? How do you showcase your work? If there is a problem in your product and you need to speak to the client, you're not going to go and cry and talk about your personal issues. You're just going to say, listen, we do everything. We have everything in place. And this is the problem we are encountering. I have the feeling that the way to go in the workplace is to have more and more adult conversations. And adult conversations are rational and they are logical. It doesn't mean that they are cold. It doesn't mean that they are inhumane. They are more thought after. They also take into account the circumstances of the other person, because it's not always us against them. When we are in a conversation, we are two to partake in the conversation, and whatever your actions you're going to take, they're going to have consequences on others. Now, you're not responsible for how others feel about it, but somehow you're responsible for the consequences of your actions. So being professional, coming into the conversation from a place of knowing, from a place of control, controlling yourself, control of the process, control of having thought about the consequences, and maybe for certain of them having already a solution, is going to calm down the person in front of you. All of a sudden, your conversation is a business transaction, and it's not you're not bringing a problem to the person. You're just dumping all your issues on another person. You're actually coming from a very centered, grounded, as you said, place. You have been prepared, you have thought about it, and then you have the conversation.
As you're saying this, I'm thinking that really what we're talking about is a high degree of confidence, that your needs, your perspective, your intellect matter.
Yeah.
And that you're requesting to be taken seriously, and you have to have a high degree of confidence in order to present that kind of thing. And I think, you know, that's another thing we're probably hitting on now is low self-esteem. Maybe I don't feel like I deserve to have the thing I actually want. And how am I conveying that when I'm talking to a superior? I may be saying the words, but my facial expression, my tone of voice may be conveying a very different message. So it's all about connecting with power, feeling powerful.
Yes, and,
and not power over someone else. It's just power from within, your birthright.
Yes, absolutely. And this is where there is a whole kind of mental programming to get over with, is stop thinking that because you're a woman, you have to prove more. No, you do your best. You continue your continuous education, you continue improving, you continue working. You don't have to do more than any other person just because you're a woman. There's something that I discovered, believe it or not, recently, in the last 10 years, is that men have as many doubts about themselves as women, but they, in the workplace, but they have been told not to show it because it's not manly, right? To be vulnerable or whatever, you know, whatever name they give it. women have been encouraged to talk more about what they feel and how they feel and their doubts. And they tend to take it a bit too far, as in to voice it to their boss. And it comes from a place of, you know, not feeling confident or feeling scared. And when your boss is not someone who is very receptive to these kind of emotions, it is not a good kind of display in a way. It doesn't mean that you have to shove them. It doesn't mean that you don't have to address them. But you can address them in a way that showcases yourself. And again, as if you were a product, when you are in your integrity in a way, when you know what you are doing, when you know that you are doing your best, when you know that you are in charge and in control of your part of the job, you're not responsible necessarily for what other people do, you're responsible for the end result, possibly. When you are very, very clear about why you're doing what you're doing and how you're doing it, and that requires a prep before, then you know that you don't need more than that, actually, to have the conversation. One of the ways that I tell people, and especially women, but I tell men as well, is before having a review or a conversation with your boss, just take an hour or two a day or three before and put in a spreadsheet or on a document all the accomplishments that you have done over the last, let's say, 6 months or since the last conversation. Really put everything, even the little thing that seemed completely, you know, irrelevant, like helping a coworker when she or he was sick. All of these things, put them and just take a step back and look at how much you have accomplished in 6 months. And when you go to that conversation, even if the conversation does not turn around that piece of paper, you have built inside of you the knowing and the pride of what you have accomplished. And this is how you build on self-confidence. It's not about pretending, but it's about knowing. And knowing, well, our brain need proof. And when you put it on a piece of paper and when you show everything that you have accomplished, your brain looks at it like, ah, it's not that bad, right? Yes, it's pretty good. There are days where you work, I don't know, 12 hours a day and you delivered what was needed. Also in these sheets, and I think it's more and more relevant now in the workplace, is also all the soft skills, is teamwork, is mentoring, is all the corporate charities you can be involved in. All this is relevant as well. I think at the end of the day, men as women, we are all motivated as well by doing good in the world. We all need a sense of meaning. We all need a sense of purpose. And giving back when you have a job makes it also a bit more sweet on you, makes the deal and the work a bit more sweeter on you. And it could be just helping a friend, or it could be just, you know, mentoring a junior person as well. It's really very enriching for a person to kind of give back and pay it forward as well.
Definitely agree. And I like the idea too of making a list of all of the things that you've done that you're proud of or that you feel have been a contribution to the workplace. It's so easy just to focus on the things you've done wrong. And that's typically what we humans do, is we focus on where we screwed up. So to actually write it down and to look at it, even if, like you said, you don't use it in a meeting, but it just to kind of get you in the right headspace when you go in and have that conversation. I mean, the deal is that I have met assholes who were men and who were women. Mm-hmm. I have met people who are incompetent, who are men and who are women. I mean, it's not really a gender. We have a lot of cultural things attached to gender.
Yeah.
Especially in the workplace. And I'm hoping that will start changing. I mean,
it is.
There is a lot of attention being brought to it. But it's more like coming from this place of, I have something to contribute. And everyone has the right, I think, or deserves the opportunity to express their contributions.
Yes, absolutely. And I agree with you. It's I think it starts with yourself. We're not going to change the workplace. Nobody is going to change everything or the world or make it a better place like this. But it starts by making yourself less prone to any gender comment, including your self-talk, is not having this, you know, women are supposed to be nice and women are supposed to be nurturing. No, F that. Women, I don't care what women do. I care what I do and I care how I do it. And know your values. And when you stay within what is important for you, the rest matters, sure. But it doesn't matter as much because you are in your own truth. You're grounding and you're grounded in what you do. For some people, for some women, getting on the top of the ladder is extremely important for them. This is what they have always been wanting. They like the idea of directing, controlling, changing the world. And there are women who get there, not easily, but it's not easy for men either. It's just that they were more visible before. For some women, it's to stay at home and having kids. And there is nothing shameful about that. It's just a choice. As long, again, as we are freed from these kind of self-imposed limitations that we have been told as kids or the school or our parents or our society, as long as we show up as being our authentic self, the rest of the world is just a noise. you can put earplugs. Sometimes you have to listen because maybe it's feedback, but you can put earplugs and continue your path. You don't need what other people are saying.
I love it. And what a great way to wrap up our conversation.
And it was such a pleasure, again, having this conversation with you. It seems that every time we talk, we could stay longer and longer and longer.
I know. I'm aware of the time, and I know you have to get going. And there are so many other things I would love to talk about, but I want to respect your time. So perhaps we can have another conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on again and going down the rabbit hole with me, the rabbit hole of gender.
Yes.
we did go a lot of different places in this conversation, so I appreciate that so much.
We seem to do this a lot in our conversations.
We do, don't
Not
we?
Very scripted, no, but it's all good.
Yeah,
it's all good.
I don't like scripts anyway.
No, I actually by far prefer these kind of open conversations because even though, you know, there is the notes, it gives me an idea, but I like the free flow. We talked about authenticity and I like also the fact that there is no right or wrong. There is only exchanges. And I really hope that, you know, the future of our world, please, people, will be a free flow of exchanges rather than, you know, shut up, no, you shut up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I agree. To have honest conversations, I think that's the way to go. And that doesn't mean that you always agree.
Yeah. And just also, I think it's even... To take it a step further is just understanding that we see the world our way. We see the world with our experience, with our culture, with our upbringing. Even if the person in front of you seems like the biggest asshole on earth, they are also seeing the world from their background and what have you. Telling them to shut up and then they are stupid is not going to change them.
Nope.
Having conversation, if you want to have the conversation, of course, having a conversation with them, trying to understand their world and have them start being curious about your world is a game changer. Now imagine doing this one by one by one by one.
Imagine.
No
yeah.
more Facebook.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, there's usually a reason why somebody is an asshole. And if you could get underneath that, then you're getting somewhere. And that usually requires getting past the bravado of the assholeness and then... And
then
getting down to the core of things and just having a conversation, just human being to human being.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me as well to have an expression. It's a very safe place and it's a very exciting place as well to be for sharing and for communication and for exchanging.
Oh, thank you. Never know where these conversations will lead, but going there with Maida is always fun and thought-provoking. To learn more about Maida, please visit her website, maidapockcoaching.com. That's maidapockcoaching.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please consider making a one-time or monthly donation of any amount using the link in the show notes or on the podcast page of my website, lucidpathwellness.com. You can also support Lucid Cafe by subscribing to make sure that you never miss an episode, giving it a positive review, or letting others know about the show. However you support the show, it really does mean a lot, so thank you. Until next time.